In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Like a Midas touch by the very first time, I make decisions with my wallet, not my mind. Too much money for one person to control. Ooh, audacity will not buy back your soul.
Welcome to Too Much Money, the podcast that asks, does being a billionaire make you crazy, or do you need to be crazy to be a billionaire? I am Dori Shafrir.
And I am Joe Piazza. I'm back.
You're back.
I'm back. I missed you so much, but Nick did a good job. I was just listening to his episode, and he was so happy. So
happy.
He was
happy. He was really happy to talk about the thing that he was obsessed with. It was very sweet.
I know. And, you know, he's obsessed with things in outer space because he's a man.
Right.
He's a man. Yeah.
Well, it was also just really sweet that he was, like, so game to do it. And, you know, my husband is a podcaster. So if I asked him to do it, it wouldn't be, like, that weird. But, like, Nick is not a podcaster. And he was just like, sure, like, I'll do this thing. Like, it was very nice. So, Nick, thank you.
Thank you, Nick. We appreciate you. And I remain afraid of those satellites because, you know, I don't know. The one thing that I told Nick when I was listening to the episode is I don't know if he properly expressed my complete and utter terror when I saw this happen.
I don't think he did.
No, because I thought we were being it looks like we're being invaded by aliens. And the fact that, you know, I'm a person who reads things, who knows news. And the fact that I didn't know that, oh, okay, you just might see this massive, like, train of light go across the sky because Elon Musk has all these satellites. That seemed like a big blind spot in the general populace's knowledge.
I mean, it was a blind spot in my populace's knowledge. So.
Exactly. So, yes, I was terrified. Until Nick explained this to me. And I think the episode was really great, but I'm happy to be back in the saddle.
I'm really happy to have you back because today we are talking about something that I feel like is close to both of our hearts in a way.
Ooh, there's many things that are close to
there's many things that are close to both of our hearts. But, you know, both of us kind of came up in media and some form of tabloid journalism. I mean, mine was more sort of online and yours was the Daily News and other publications. But we were sort of like steeped in a certain media culture, I think it's fair to say, for over a decade.
For a long time.
For a long time.
I would say during our formative years.
During our formative
our
careers.
Years. Yeah. Yes. Absolutely.
Yes. So, you know, I saw this news item the other day about how Karlie Kloss, the supermodel who is married to Josh Kushner, the venture capitalist who is Jared Kushner's brother, had laid off most of the staff of ID Magazine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, huh. And then I remembered the news that she had bought the magazine in November 2023. And so these layoffs came a few weeks ago. They came at the end of March. And it just, you and I started talking about just the whole phenomenon of very wealthy, usually billionaires, buying media properties.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, they love them. They've been a pet project, a pet project forever, right?
Yes. Yes. So it just, you know, it just really interested me. And I started thinking about all of the various media properties that have been bought by billionaires over the years and kind of what had happened to them. Now, before we get into this, I do just want to remind everyone that they can email us at toomuchmoneypodcast@gmail.com. We love to hear your thoughts. We love your feedback. We love your suggestions. We love your compliments.
We do. We do. I thrive on compliments right now. It's like my air. So I just really appreciate them.
Joe, actually, before we get into it, do you want to just like briefly talk about what the last like week of your life has looked like?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I kind of feel like I've just like, you know, been thrashing around in a dumpster fire, also like filled with cannolis and joy. I mean, it's like high highs and low lows. I've been on book tour for The Sicilian Inheritance.
Yeah.
I've been in 5 or 6 cities. We've done magical sold out events all over the country for this book. And I've also, you know, in the past 6 months, I've recorded 100 podcast episodes, like other people's podcasts.
Oh my God.
Including Forever 35, which may have been my favorite.
Oh.
It brought me so much joy to talk to you and Kate. And
ditto.
And it's been awesome and also hard because selling books is hard and getting people to, you know, get excited about buying books, like literally the day that it comes out is insane. It is absolute insanity. And I think that has to do with what we're talking about today, because the places where people will read about books and see books have been completely gutted and eviscerated in the past, you know, 10, 15 years. And I will say it mainly because these editorial properties keep being bought by billionaires as hobby projects.
Yes.
And when they start them as hobby projects, they're like, I just want to create a beautiful quality product, but they can't help themselves. They want to make money. And immediately they're like, you know what doesn't always make money or ever really make money? Books coverage.
Yeah.
And so it is often the first to go. And then, you know, coverage of books moves to places like TikTok.
Yeah. I mean, that's real. It's a lot. Anyway, buy Joe's book.
Buy my book.
That's the Sicilian Inheritance.
Long story short, buy my book, The Sicilian Inheritance. It got a great review in the Times. Like I was saying, high highs, low lows. Like, you know, we got a great review in the Times, and then our Amazon number wasn't moving. And like also the fact that you can see your book rise and fall on Amazon is unhealthy.
It's really unhealthy.
It's unhealthy. So, you know, I'm happy just to be back here, just sitting here doing our thing.
Good. Me too. I'm happy to have you back.
Yeah. So, talk to me about how some billionaires have ruined media.
Okay. Well, I want to start with Carly Kloss because I think that people were kind of surprised by this because she doesn't fit sort of the typical mold of billionaire who acquires media property, which is typically like older white man billionaire. And she's relatively younger white woman. So in 2020, she was part of an investor group that acquired W Magazine.
Okay. I was a big fan of W Magazine, and I'm going to tell you, I didn't even know it was still being, is it still being published?
So now it's part of Dussel. Now it's part of Bustle. Oh my God.
Bustle. Okay.
Bustle. So it's a sort of interesting ownership structure that like we don't have to really get into, but Carly Kloss is part of this ownership structure. So she's definitely, I think, developing like this niche in like cool, fashion-y publications. And then she bought ID Magazine, and The Guardian had a really interesting, I thought, analysis of the whole situation. She also has a company called Bedford Media that is what she's kind of using, the vehicle that she's using for all these acquisitions. And there's a quote from this writer and editor named Daisy Alioto, who is a founder of a company called Dirt Media. That
Dirt Media.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she said that she sees this as like a very like Renaissance patron-esque thing. She said, it reminds me of this very old thing, which is patronage, this old concept where when people attain a certain level of wealth, there's only so many things you can buy. And if you have an inclination towards art and entertainment, it makes sense that you would enter some form of patronage around that, not just for profit. So this was really interesting to me because it kind of like crystallized a lot of the thoughts I had had around billionaires acquiring media properties, because they do frame it, as you kind of alluded to in the beginning, as like not just something that they're trying to make money out of. They sort of have this like, this is for the greater good kind of vibe.
Mm-hmm.
But it ultimately is a patronage situation where like the patron can just decide that they don't feel like funding this thing anymore. Like,
yeah, 100%. That is exactly what they can do. Or they can decide, oh, in the beginning, I just wanted art to thrive. But now I would really like money.
Yes.
Because I like money. So make money.
Yes. And so we have seen this happen again and again.
And again. Yes.
So we are going to take a short break, and when we come back, I'm going to talk about some of the other billionaires who have acquired media properties over the years and what has happened. So we'll be right back.
I can't wait. And also, I'm terrified. And
yeah.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
So I did work for a company that was a media company that was bought by a billionaire, because I worked for the New York Observer.
I believe that the Daily News was also bought by a billionaire.
Yes, Mort Zuckerman also bought the Daily News, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. So we both worked for properties that were bought by billionaires. And I do think it's important to make a distinction between companies that were bought by billionaires versus families that own media companies and have become very wealthy from those media properties, but like they were the ones, like the Sulzbergers, the founders of the New, like the people who run the New York Times, they've been running the New York Times for like 150 years or something. So they didn't buy it recently. But
exactly.
You know what I mean?
And same with
like the new houses from Condé Nast. Like there is like a slight, I think there is a distinction there. Versus people who have made their money in a totally different industry and then kind of parachute into media.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it's like old media money versus new media money. And I'm not saying that, you know, either is the greatest thing that's ever happened to media.
Right.
But there is a difference between, you know, the millionaires, robber barons that bought these properties, you know, 100 years ago. And it did become their main industry. And just a very rich person that decides they want a magazine in the same way that they might, say, wake up and decide they want the Hope Diamond.
Totally. Totally. Yes, exactly. All right. So Jared Kushner bought the New York Observer in 2006. And the New York Observer at the time was a weekly newspaper that was famously printed on salmon-colored paper, like the Financial Times. And it didn't have like a huge circulation, but it was read by like all the important people in New York. I think it was a very New York-centric publication. Mm-hmm. It covered media, it covered real estate, it covered like New York celebrities. The intellectual scene, very highbrow, and they had covered the story of Jared Kushner's disgraced father and how he had gone to prison. And the story that I had always heard was that part of the motivation for buying the paper was that the Kushner family wanted a media property that they could kind of, where they could kind of control the narrative around what was written about their family.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I was a New Yorker at this time. Also, so many of our friends worked at this newspaper.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, yes, and yes.
Yeah. So I worked there from 2007 to 2009. And, you know, we didn't see Jared very often. He was occasionally in the office, but like his presence was felt, and he was also very young at the time. And I think he had recently started dating Ivanka Trump. So like you definitely got the discussions around like what was covered and what was not happened at kind of a higher pay grade than I was on, but like you weren't going to write anything negative about his family. Like that just wasn't going to happen. And I think, you know, the New York Observer ultimately was like a pretty small, albeit influential newspaper, but ultimately pretty small. But you see these bigger properties where the billionaires are kind of putting their thumb on the scale and things get a little trickier. So for example, as Joe just alluded to, Mort Zuckerman bought the Daily News. When did Martin Zuckerman buy the Daily News? He bought the Daily News. Okay, so he bought the Atlantic in 1980. And then he bought U.S. News and World Report in 1984. And then he bought the Daily News in 1993. He sold it to Tronc, which was what the Tribune Company had renamed itself in an attempt to become more like digital online savvy, I guess.
Right. Digital online savvy.
Digital online savvy. But the Tribune Company had also been bought by a billionaire, Sam Zell. So Sam Zell Sam Zell was a billionaire who bought Tribune Media, which owned the Chicago Tribune, the Baltimore Sun, Newsday, Hartford Courant. It also owned the Chicago Cubs. It owned Wrigley Field. And he bought that company in December 2007. And I think it is fair to say that, like, he ultimately kind of ran it into the ground. Less than a year later, they filed the largest bankruptcy in the history of the American media industry. And he sold off various parts of the company. And then in 2016, they rebranded as Tronc, which stood for Tribune Online Content.
It's also the worst name ever. Hey,
the worst name ever.
We own Tronc. Tronc.
So there is a funny article about this in The Ringer in 2018, where they basically talked about what a disaster the whole rebrand of the company had been. And soon, this is from the article. Soon after the rebrand, then chairman Michael Farrow was mocked for his predilection for buzzwords and his dream of turning the news gathering company into a virtual farm for robot generated viral videos. Quote, right now we're doing a couple hundred videos a day. We think we should be doing 2,000 videos a day, he told CNBC. Now, this is interesting. This was interesting to me too, because I read this and I thought, oh, this is what, like, he was kind of predicting the AI future.
Yep, yep. Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was.
But, like, to me, that also feels like the dream of billionaires. Like, they don't want the messy parts of running the media company, of, like, all these pesky journalists. Like,
of the humans.
Of the humans. The
like, they, yeah, they acquire, I mean, much like a certain billionaire who acquired a lot of land in Hawaii where humans lived, and then they realized, oh my gosh, it's messy having to care for humans. These same billionaires acquire a media company that, you know, used to require humans to run. And they're like, that's a lot. That's a lot to handle.
Yeah.
What if we could get rid of those humans?
Right. Exactly.
I have to say two things that really scared me this week in terms of AI. One is that I was at a mom influencing conference in Nashville.
Okay.
And there were many, many sessions on how to use AI as an influencer. And nearly every human there told me that their newsletter and their captions and even their like email subject lines are all being at least helped, if not fully, almost fully articulated by artificial intelligence.
Really?
Yes, 100%. And it was made, and like not to like, you know, they equated it. And I'm not slamming anyone for this, because I'm also like, the world is hard and I freaking get it. They equated it to an efficiency thing. It's like, I can just do more. And frankly, we're all trying to do more and make more content because it's quantity over quality at this point. And it's as if it's like a housewife saying, I bought a washing machine, so I just am more efficient in my job. Mm-hmm. And then I do consulting for a media company, which I won't name, but they said they're, quote, experimenting with AI right now. And they gave a list of words that they have told AI not to use in their content. And I just love it when a media company tells you they're, quote, experimenting with AI. And I'm like, no, you're figuring out how to replace our jobs. Like, this is, you're literally trying to train a machine to do what we do. And you're not even being shy about it.
Yeah. I mean, I am really fearing the future, to be perfectly honest. So the whole sort of debacle with Tronc also coincides with another billionaire purchasing of a media property that I want to talk about after we take another break.
Can't wait.
Okay, we'll be right back.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Okay, so this next one that I want to talk about is the one that has affected me probably the most recently because I live in Los Angeles, which is the purchase of the Los Angeles Times by the billionaire Patrick Soon-Shiong. He bought the paper in 2018 from Tronc. Now, Patrick Soon-Shiong in 2021, he was estimated to be worth at least $8 billion. He's been called the richest man in Los Angeles. He was a doctor. And he made all his money through like medical research, patents, vaccines, all those medical things that can be very lucrative. he made his money in an interview with the New Yorker. They characterized him as that he likes to present himself as an accidental billionaire. And he said, I would like to be remembered primarily as a physician scientist.
Okay.
Which, you know, of course. And he paid $500 million for the LA Times. I think my sense is that the consensus is that he overpaid for the paper. Like Jeff Bezos bought the Washington Post for $250 million in 2013, which was only 5 years earlier. The Washington Post, I think, had a bigger circulation, bigger newsroom. Like my sense is that he probably paid too much. He also got the San
Diego Union. I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. and so this is funny too. So he appointed Norman Perlstein, who was this like very well-known, longtime top editor at Time Inc. And mm-hmm. he appointed him as executive editor. And this is what Perlstein told the New Yorker. He made the acquisition with very little due diligence because he thought that it had to be easier than curing cancer. I'm not sure whether he still believes that. So like this to me just feels like the hubris, the billionaire hubris that we see again and again, where like these people come in from a completely different industry. I mean, Patrick Soon-Shiong had zero media experience. Yes, he was
zero media experience. And that's the thing. I'm like, why do billionaires think that they can do any, like the hubris is just amazing. It's like, you have no experience in this industry.
Yeah.
I'm not tooting my own horn, but I think I've been very successful in media. I've created a lot of websites. I've run magazines. You know, I've written best-selling novels. I am not going to wake up one morning and say, I can cure fucking cancer.
Right, exactly. 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 Right, like we don't think we can just like do all this other stuff. It's just unbelievable how people think that media is like this thing that you can just do if you
You can just do it. Anyone, it's just up for grabs.
It's just up for grabs.
Anyone can, you know, objectively report and share all of the information all over the world. Easy peasy. I mean, the thing that drives me nuts is like none of these, so many things drive me nuts. I mean, I get into a very deep, dark depression over this subject because so many of my friends have lost their livelihood as incredible reporters and storytellers because these billionaires have failed to help these properties thrive. I don't know what all of these incredibly smart and capable people will do next because we are not creating better or new media nor is anyone paying them to do these things. Mm-hmm. But also because, you know, it just keeps happening over and over again. I mean, frankly, I've got to say, the billionaire that's doing the best with a property is probably Bezos, I would think, right now with the Washington Post. But he is pretty hands-off. I mean, but correct me if I'm wrong, because I probably don't know enough.
So he is pretty hands-off, but there have been some controversies about how they covered, how they've been covering Amazon. And there were also layoffs at the Washington Post. So, you know, it hasn't been like all smooth sailing over there for sure. But definitely, I think you're right in that it has been somewhat smoother sailing than the LA Times. The LA Times just did a big layoff, like a couple months ago, that was very, very disruptive and controversial, and people were very upset about it, understandably, because, you know, I think the other thing is, like, these people come in, and he definitely came in like this, saying, like, I am going to invest all this money, I'm going to build this out, it's going to be great, we're hiring all these people, like, he hired a ton of people. And then, like, you know, 2 years later, 3 years later, it's like, it's not profitable in the way that I thought it was going to be, because I thought I could cure cancer and thought I could also run the LA Times.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's like it is. It's kind of, you know, it's kind of depressing. In January, there were layoffs, and he said that the cuts were necessary because the paper could no longer lose $30 to $40 million a year without making progress toward building higher readership that would bring in advertising and subscriptions to sustain the organization. Drastic changes were needed, he said, including installing new leaders who would focus on strengthening the outlet's journalism to become indispensable to more readers. Which, like, okay, that's a laudable goal. But, like,
sure, of course it is. But I feel like they always go in with laudable goals.
Yes.
And then abandon.
Other thing that they go in doing, and you kind of alluded to this earlier too, is like they go in saying that they're okay with losing money.
But they're never going to be, then, like, they can't. It's like their tip,
right,
okay?
Exactly.
They're never going to be okay with losing money.
They're never going to be okay with losing money. And so for him to say, like, $30 to $40 million a year, yes, that sounds like a lot, but he has $8 billion.
Exactly. Another problem is that billionaires like the bright and shiny things that often come with these media companies, like the fancy building and, you know, the news helicopters, like, thing, very expensive line items that actually probably really could be downsized. I just keep thinking about the media property that just failed, The Messenger. One of my friends was working at that. And yeah, they had, like, the fancy New York City office space, which, to be honest, they didn't need.
Right.
And so, like, they like to spend the money on the things that don't actually make the news.
Yeah.
Because it's shiny yeah, and it's pretty.
Yeah, totally. Totally. So, you know, I don't think we've seen the end of it. There's also, you know, Lorraine Powell Jobs has a media company called Emerson Collective that has invested in a lot of media properties that similarly, like, she has, like, suddenly taken funding away. She has decided that companies need to make money. Like, it's just, you kind of see this again and again. Same with Pierre Omidyar, who his company was called, I think it was it called First Look Media? First Look Media. And he launched the Intercept, and then he kind of like disappeared.
Yeah, that's what they do.
Yeah,
that's what when they're like, oh, mm-hmm. media is hard.
Yeah,
and then they just disappear.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't think we've seen the end of this trend. I mean, I think we're going to probably see more people like Karlie Kloss, like these very wealthy people from kind of other industries, maybe investing in media properties that are like close to their niche. You know, I think it is a scary thing for a democracy when a society is unable to sustain journalism. So, and has to like rely on billionaires. Like it's very scary.
It's terrifying. And then it, you know, leaves news in the hands of really anyone who wants to post things on social media.
Yep.
And two more terrifying things that happened to me last week. One is that I was having a conversation with someone about 2 days before the eclipse. And they said, well, did you see on the news that all the banks are going to shut down for those 3 minutes when everything goes dark? And I was like, that's not true. That's not a thing. And they're like, it was on the news. And I was like, where did you see it? And they said, TikTok. And I was like, well, you know, I don't think that is actual news. And they're like, well, I don't care. I took all my money out of the bank anyway. And I'm like, okay.
Right.
I just saw very dangerous misinformation happen right in front of me.
Yeah.
And then I've been using Canva a lot for like promotions for the book tour. And the most popular, most used Canva templates to create social media assets are the ones that mimic a breaking news font.
Mm.
And so they're videos that actually say breaking news with the news chyron on it. And they just make it so easy to make any bit of information look like news. And no one's talked about that yet. I was like, can we get a good story about how the most popular Canva assets are imitating news and that's not crazy. Okay.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's leave everyone on a dark.
Listen, if there's any billionaires who want to invest in our podcast, we are open to it.
Totally.
If you want to dictate what we talk about, I mean, I guess I would be okay with that.
We will stop talking smack about you, Bezos and Musk. But that's the only way.
That's the only way.
You literally have to pay us.
Yeah, you do. You have to pay us.
Yeah, because I mean, yeah, at the end of the day, what else am I going to do? There's nowhere else I can work anymore.
It's true. It's so true. Well, Joe, I'm sorry that this ended up being like a little more depressing and less fun than
really nice way to come back.
Yeah, sure. than our typical romps. But you know, I think it is an important thing to talk about. So,
yeah, 100%. And I think there's more to it too. Like, I really do think that we can even do another episode into like specific media properties. I would actually love to go back and do something fun. There's so much billionaire bullshit going on in the present day that we've ignored a lot of historic billionaires. I think we could really have a whale of a time with Hearst.
Totally. Oh my God. Yes.
Yeah. Like just like the lesser known Hearst evils.
Yeah.
A really excellent
episode. Yes. 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 Well, yeah. Joe, let's also remind everyone that Too Much Money is hosted and produced by us, Dori Shafrir and Joe Piazza. Our music is by Lisa Brenner and our network partners, Acast. Thank you all so much for listening.
Like a Midas touch by the very first time, I make decisions with my wallet, not my mind. Too much money for one person to control.